We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
It's time for the Climate Cast. It's our weekly discussion about the science of climate change. Today, rising temperatures, rising sea levels, and what they'll mean for cities around the world. Paul Huttner is here. Hey.
Good morning,
welcome.
Carrie.
Hey, we felt like we needed a bit of clarification after last week when we mentioned a report that had come out from Climate Central on cities and sea level. And you mentioned Miami.
Right.
I think I misunderstood what you were saying, and then I had some emails from listeners about it. So let's clarify what we were talking about.
Look, here's the thing. There's a pretty wide divergence in the scientific community about how quickly sea levels will rise and what areas will be underwater. Let's be clear about a couple of things. One, there are already areas in Miami Beach that are underwater when they get these high tides. It happened at the end of September with the full moon. It will happen again in October. And those tides are running 6 to 12 inches above forecast. They've already seen a foot of sea level rise in the Miami area in the last 100 years. So they've spent, for example, $300 million on this series of pumps to try to keep the water out. What Climate Central did is they did this project and they estimated when locked-in greenhouse gases that have already been emitted will cause a certain sea level rise.
What do we mean by locked-in, Paul?
What we've already pumped into the atmosphere, okay. This Climate Central project says 5 feet of sea level rise is already locked in. It may take, you know, quite a while for that to happen, could be hundreds of years. But some people are saying that maybe the IPCC projections on sea level rise are too slow, too conservative. Mm-hmm. There are some that say these effects in places like Miami may become much more apparent by as early as 2050 or 2100, so the end of this century. And there are some that say it could take hundreds of years beyond that. So it's an open question as to how quickly places like Greenland will melt, how quickly the oceans expand from thermal expansion because they're becoming warmer. And this is an area, I think, that we're really going to see this slow background hum of sea level rise accumulate over time. It's a slow process until it's not, when you get a storm surge on top of these higher sea levels, and then it can turn into a quick catastrophe.
Let's bring our guest in. Benjamin Strauss is with us. He's vice president for sea levels and climate impacts at Climate Central, and he's with us today from Princeton, New Jersey. And Ben, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Good morning.
Do you want to add anything to what Paul has said about the report that you put together and this idea of locked-in greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, he really characterized it very well. When we put carbon in the atmosphere, it stays there for a large fraction of it stays there for centuries and even thousands of years. So the warming is prolonged over that period, even a longer period. And ice continues to melt, sea level continues to rise. So we've already, in our best assessment, locked in about 5 feet of sea level rise. Depending on what we do moving forward, if we cut carbon emissions very aggressively, we might see as little as 8 feet of sea level rise locked in over the long run. But if we continue on our current trend, we would end up locking in 23 feet, 25 feet, wow, possibly more.
And again, when you say we have locked in 5 feet, we haven't seen that yet, but we know that's going to be the consequences of the emissions that have already occurred.
That's right.
Okay.
If you think of a pile of ice on a table in a warm room, it's much easier to estimate how much of it will melt than how quickly it will melt.
Got it.
You know it's all going to melt. It's much harder to say exactly how quickly. So we're saying we know, or we're very confident in our assessment that we'll see at least 5 feet of sea level rise. Harder to say when.
That's a really good analogy, actually. Paul?
Benjamin, Paul Huttner here. Thanks for joining us this morning. These king tides that I talked about in Florida, and they occur, of course, on the East Coast and other places, but I'm wondering about these water levels that have exceeded the forecast by 6 to 12 inches in the last king tide in late September. Can we sort of look at these king tides as kind of a real-time barometer for the effects of sea level rise on the U.S. East Coast going forward?
Sure. I think they're really kind of a preview. The extra 6 to 12 inches we're seeing right now, I think, has to do with shorter-term fluctuations. The water's a little warmer there right now. There's been some lower pressure in the atmosphere. But, those tides, the tides we're going to see in the next couple weeks will probably break 2 feet above the high tide line. And a flood 2 feet above the high tide line has been made, we estimate, more than five times more likely because of climate-driven sea level rise for South Florida.
One of the things that you did in this report, and I was online yesterday looking at the visuals that you put, the graphics that you put up with it, you drew a line of sea level rise at 20 feet, and then you looked at nations and megacities to see how much land was going to end up below that line. In other words, this is the amount of land that could be exposed to flooding if temperatures indeed went that high. And I thought, let's use your estimate for Shanghai, China. So more than 11 million people could be affected by the amount of land that would be submerged if these temperatures go to the levels that could be predicted. Is all that true?
Well, China has the most people at stake of any country in the world. So it's kind of an interesting connection where China is right now the world's number one emitter of carbon pollution, but it's also got one quarter of the world's population on low-lying coastal land.
Mm-hmm.
So, the land where tens and hundreds of millions of people live in China is at stake.
Call here from Al in Eden Prairie. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great.
Good.
My only thought on this when I wanted to hear you guys talking was, is basically our future, at least on the coastal, lower coastal cities, the future basically going to be like Holland, I believe it is, where they basically have a seawall around the majority of the country?
It's a great question. I think different places will respond in different ways. A lot of New Orleans is already below sea level, and they've got 25-foot levees surrounding the city, so it's something like a Dutch model. You can do that in a lot of places to protect. There's a risk, which is if and when the levees fail, then you're sitting at the bottom of a bowl, and the event can be much more catastrophic. And then there are places like South Florida where you really can't build a levee because the bedrock is porous. It's full of holes like Swiss cheese, and water would just penetrate underneath levees through the ground.
So
other cities simply haven't been built. In Holland, the land was kind of drained and levees were built and development followed. So the landscape is organized that way. But we've built cities, before we built levees. So I think there's going to be a big problem in a lot of places. Where will the levees fit? How will that work with urban design?
I mean, Paul, that raises the specter, I guess, of retreat from some of these areas, right?
I think in some areas it will. But I think the specter I'm hearing, too, the background thread here is money. These projects cost a lot of money. Infrastructure projects cost money. I mentioned the city of Miami Beach already spending $300 million on these pumps. Interesting tidbit this week, Carrie, Harvey Rubin is the Miami-Dade County clerk. He's written a letter to Congress asking for a sort of sea level rise super fund for that area. And Benjamin, I'm wondering, have you or anyone looked at the impact of sort of the economic impact? We've got coastal real estate, city infrastructure, insurance losses, the economic impact of these predicted sea level rises on the U.S. economy. I know it's been estimated as much as $6 trillion worth of Florida property is at risk from sea level rise. What's your thinking on that?
We haven't done a detailed economic analysis yet, although we know that many billions and even trillions of dollars of property are on land that will be exposed to flooding and increased flooding as sea levels rise. But I think, it's going to be a huge issue, and it's going to be happening everywhere at once. So there will be state and federal handouts to some places, but by and large, I don't think that central governments are going to be able to afford it.
Ben, I was just going to note here, and just in a minute or so, I was surprised to see nations like Iran and Russia on your list of top 20 nations they're going to be affected. You know, we tend to think of places like China, Bangladesh, low sea level. I mean, this really gives us a sense of how broad the threat of this is.
Well, it is a wide threat. Asia really is the epicenter, while there are threats in Iran and in Russia, it's China and Southeast Asia that bear the brunt. About 5 of 6 people in the world who live in low-lying coastal areas.
Got it.
Live in Asia.
Ben Strauss, thank you very much for being part of the ClimateCast today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Benjamin
Ben.
Strauss is Vice President for Sea Levels and Climate Impacts at Climate Central. Paul, I just want to note that you saw the story in the Star Trib earlier this week about several Twin Cities companies making enhanced commitments ahead of Paris.
Yeah, and specifically we're talking about Target, Best Buy, and General Mills, who joined the American Business Act on Climate Pledge. Basically, it was announced Monday. These companies have committed a greater commitment to going green, if you will. Target's going solar on rooftops, Best Buy reducing carbon emissions. It's part of a growing trend, Carrie, where corporations, and this includes Cargill now locally, that are jumping on the climate bandwagon, saying this is good for business and good for the environment.
I think our next in-depth ClimateCast will be ahead of Paris, right? We'll be talking about what gets accomplished there.
It will.
Thank
Very
you.
Interesting day is coming up.
Good to
up.
See you.
Thanks, Carrie.